Hello and welcome to Bidfood's Talking Food podcast. I'm Joe Anglis, and in this, our second series, we'll be hearing from experts from both inside and outside of Bidfood, with the aim of being able to connect all aspects of the UK food service industry through fun and interesting topics. We'd love to get you involved in the show, so if you'd like to leave your feedback or share any topic ideas for us to explore, please leave a comment on our social media platform at Bidfood UK. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast via Apple, Spotify, and all the major podcast channels. Today's episode is the first part of a very exciting topic, our trends for 2020. Our trends for the year are pieced together by our insights team who have been working with food experts, research resources, and keeping our finger on the pulse of the latest foodie news. For part one of two, we'll be discussing the five social trends that are impacting the way we eat and drink. First of all, a big welcome to my co-host for today, Lucy Pedrick. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, Joe.
Lucy is our head of insight and customer experience and heads up the team that launches our trends every year. So first of all, Lucy, what's the story to get us to where we are now?
Well, I've been at Bidfood about 4 years now, and in that time we've launched about six food and drink trends to the business. The first one was really low key. It was just around a table with a few internal stakeholders, and it's really got much bigger and bigger over the years. So we launched this year's trends at the end of November last year, and we've got five social trends and five food and drink trends for the business. The five social trends that we've identified this year are eco-anxiety, individual versus community. And why we do those is because we want to set the scene for the food and drink trends. The social trends really give the context around how consumers are eating out and the decisions that they're making, and really looks at the bigger influences on the lifestyles that we're all leading these days.
Great, thanks Lucy. There's a lot to go through now, so let's get the ball rolling and introduce our first guest to find out more on these trends. So our first guest joining Lucy and I today is Rupak Sharma from Future Thinking. Welcome, Rupak.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No problem at all. So Rupak, please can you introduce yourself to our audience?
Of course. So my name's Rupak. I'm a senior director at Future Thinking. We're a data intelligence agency, an insight agency. And we work with a whole kind of range of different clients. The bulk of our work is focused on new product development, customer experience, and also media and comms. And what we do is we combine what people say they do with what they actually do. And that's where the kind of data intelligence angle comes in. So we do a lot of data science as well as your traditional primary market research.
From 2019, yeah. What was the sort of thing that you thought was the most interesting thing coming out of food and drink?
Me and my colleagues within the team that I work in, we do quite a lot of work kind of within FMCG and food and drink. And some of the more interesting things that we've kind of come across are, for example, the kind of bring your own Tupperware along to supermarkets, or Waitrose, the ones who are pushing that quite a lot. But there's a whole host of other things going on. The vegan movement is really strong. Veganuary obviously is a huge talking point. I've got people in my personal life who are becoming vegan, and I grew up being a vegetarian, which changed not too long ago. So I'm probably going to try my best to go back the other way. I tried the vegan toastie from Costa this morning, so maybe that'll catch on. Some of the other trends, low and no alcohol, we're seeing growing quite a lot. So a lot of different types of gins, craft beers, which are low or no alcohol. We know that the younger kind of generation compared to maybe some of us aren't drinking as much as us or smoking as much as us. So there's there's a real place for that there. And we're seeing that kind of growing as a trend, kind of started, maybe 2017. And it's kind of developing quite nicely since then.
What's your favorite type of cuisine? What do you like to eat most?
My family are Indian. So Indian food is great. Probably my favorite meal last year was probably a South Indian dosa. Which I had when I went to India, which was really good. Onion and paneer filling, and it was, just so much better than what you can get here. Really authentic, yeah.
You and your team worked with us on a piece of research last year to look at this driving force behind trying to eliminate single-use packaging. Is this something that you're seeing more as a request from other clients of yours to tackle what needs to be done about this?
Absolutely. We've worked with clothing manufacturers about sustainable clothing, telling them about where people are along a particular journey in terms of adopting that behavior. So you know, are you someone who isn't interested at all in buying sustainable clothing versus someone who's doing it actively now? And so giving them an idea of what the proportions are along that journey in terms of the scale. But then not just stopping there, not just saying, okay, this is how many people are at each stage, but how do we get people to move along and encourage them along that scale? The other type of work we've done is also helping people with their corporate responsibility messaging. So we've worked with quite a large, the largest drinks manufacturer, and helped them with understanding how they should talk about sustainability and environmental issues, and what initiatives they could enact and encourage and be part of. So, you know, a lot of the focus is around not just looking like you're being, you know, doing reactionary things, but being proactive. I think a lot of our clients are understanding that they play a key role in actually pushing this agenda forward, as opposed to maybe reacting to the kind of wider public perception.
This research fell within our eco-anxiety social trends. What do you think has been the biggest challenge for consumers in trying to combat this powerlessness under the climate change? Is it to do with the terminology of what's recyclable, biodegradable, and elements like that? Or is it just being able to access the right products and packaging when they're eating out or on the go, for example?
Sure. I think there's a wide variety of reasons. So awareness, and we think everyone's kind of generally aware of environmental issues, but maybe not necessarily specific things and particularly specific initiatives. So how can they actually be involved? As well as initiatives, incentives are really important. Usually monetary form, it's not necessarily a lot of money, but it's just something to encourage people to take part, even if it's not necessarily top of mind for them initially. And so maybe in the UK, that's something that we need to kind of catch up on, because at the moment it feels as though a lot of the onus is on the consumer, and maybe some of the cost of having to do these activities is based on the consumer's kind of participation rather than being encouraged to take part.
And do you see some consumers seeing it as a responsibility of stakeholders higher up the government chain, for example, in terms of eliminating some of these costs or imposing certain regulations about what should be available? How do consumers feel about that?
Yeah, so from the research that we did with Bidfood, we found that the bulk of the responsibility is seen as being on the manufacturers. So the very kind of start of the chain, at least from a consumer's mindset. And so if the manufacturers are the ones who are kind of providing the goods and doing the packaging and all of those kind of elements, that they would be seen as the ones who need to be targeted first in their minds, or be seen as the people who are driving the agenda, enacting change, being the ones to proactively take a stance as opposed to being kind of pushed into making certain decisions.
So I guess one other question I have from that would be, how do you think this trend is going to develop over time?
Eco-anxiety trend, it's kind of hit quite a bit of a peak at the moment, hasn't it? So we know there's a lot of emotive terminology and talk going on at the moment. We have kind of slight, you know, personality. So Greta Thunberg is a really obvious one. And so, you know, there's a bit of a cult of celebrity kind of starting to build around the trend. But I think generally people are... it's going to continue. So I think what it's indicating is a increased level of individual responsibility, and having, you know, taking that responsibility upon yourself to actually be part of the change. I think up until now there's been a lot of emphasis on, as we were just talking about, manufacturers and government, but people are starting to think, I can enact a lot of change within my daily life. And so we're starting to see people doing certain activities that are at an individual level, as opposed to just kind of relying on the government to change policy around plastic or manufacturers changing their packaging. From our perspective, it will continue to develop.
I guess that links back to the conversation we had about veganism as well. All of those elements culminate in an impact on combating climate change in some way, if we all adopted a slightly different behaviour.
Yes. So, yeah, we know that Bidfood's got their policies around animal welfare and palm oil and those kind of things. So there are certain elements around sustainability and environmental topics that customers are really kind of aware of and know to look out for, because it's things that have been talked about quite a lot. But there's a lot of other topics issues around animal welfare that are driving things like veganism. But it's interesting because veganism isn't just being driven by animal welfare. So there was a recent BBC article, I don't know if you saw that, but yeah, it was showing kind of the reasons behind people adopting veganuary. And a lot of it was people just saying, I just want to cut down the portions of meat I'm eating, and from a health perspective. So those who are consider themselves meat eaters, the primary reason for doing veganuary was be more healthy. Yeah. For the vegans who are vegans all the time, the primary reason for them is animal welfare. So there's a whole host of different reasons why people do the same thing, and it's just about understanding what messaging is going to work for different types of people. But what we do know is these are trends that are going to need to be catered for. So as I mentioned earlier, a vegan toastie at Costa doesn't seem like a big deal, but the amount of work that goes into having to provide that one product, and we know that some of our other clients, you know, fast food clients that we have, a lot of the work that they do around veganism and vegetarian products, it involves a lot of operational change and work and investment just to be able to provide a couple of extra products to customers. So that's true. We can see that clients, large brands are investing in this space, even if the percentages at overall population level are not great. There's an obvious trend there, and so they're starting to already cater for it and invest in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can also see there's a lot of people that want to, but potentially there isn't the availability for the foods there. And you see a lot of these big brands that are bringing out, like KFC brought out the new vegan chicken, and you say Costa have a vegan sandwich and things like that. It's becoming a lot more available, so people are more inclined to then change their diets to a vegan diet, say.
Yes, and maybe not just change it to a vegan diet, but on the odd day here and there, maybe not eat meat. And we already know that people are adopting days where they're kind of turning down how much meat they consume and buy. We know that meat purchasing is down year on year. So there's a trend developing there, not just about people adopting a very, you know, specific stance on, I'm just not going to eat meat or dairy products anymore. But there's a lot of people who are saying, half of the week I'm not going to eat meat, or maybe it'll be 1 or 2 days a week. And so that's, you know, it's the start of something that's quite big. And there's a whole variety of different reasons. Consumers understand the climate impact of the meat industry, but also, yeah, just the health aspect. So there's a whole host of different reasons, and, you know, different types of people are buying into it for their own personal reasons. But there's a greater good that everyone can seemingly buy into as well, which is really powerful.
I think the other thing that we're seeing in the food trends is that certain cuisines adopted by some of the high street outlets is starting with a basis of vegan dishes or vegetarian dishes that can be layered up with meat protein as and when a consumer requires it. So you have something available to everyone at a base level with the option to add things to that offer so that you're meeting that wider consumer base as well. So that's one way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think operationally that's probably a lot easier to deal with, to have an isolated area just for the meat, because contamination, we know the vegan society are really, you know, strict on whether something's actually, you know, classified as vegan, no cross-contamination. So when you've got fast food restaurants offering, you know, KFC mentioned as offering a vegan burger, how they're keeping that in isolation from the rest of the products that are being cooked, a lot of it would have to be kind of cooked completely separately. So KFC have obviously invested quite heavily in that. So yeah, totally agree.
So in terms of our customers, how is this trend going to develop? What can they do?
So what we learned from the research is that the onus is on the manufacturer a lot of the time. And so the research showed, when we spoke to your customers, and we had a database of customers that we reached out to, that they felt that there was more that could be done, but that you are doing a lot of good work. And so it's just about continuing along that journey. But engaging them. So we know that procurement processes and those kind of things are involving, you know, looking at the sustainability and environmental aspect as well.
I think also we have the benefit of our sustainability work streams. We're addressing all of these things as well. So really understanding how we take better action and communicate what we have been doing against the 17 UN sustainability goals that we've been working to. So understanding that our range is correct for everybody in terms of single-use packaging, that we have the right accreditation on all the products that we have in our range, and we continue to revise that, but also keeping an eye on everything that we do and we are doing already in terms of fuel, vehicle usage, depot infrastructure.
Yeah,
that's great. Thank you very much for your time today, Rupak.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem at all. Next, joining us on the phone today is Fiona Speakman from CGA. Today we're going to be talking about two of the social trends, individual versus community and helpful tech. Welcome, Fiona, to the Bid Food Talking Food podcast.
Hi, so thank you, Joe. So I'm from CGA, as you mentioned, and I'm a client director in the food and retail team. We're a data and insight consultancy specifically focused on the out-of-home eating and drinking market.
So how did you get into the role you're in today?
So I've always been in the food and drink industry in one way or another. I started my career back in the day, a few years ago in 2007 with Kellogg's. So moving on to just working my way around the brands, working with Kraft Heinz. And I've always been involved in both the retail and the food service side of things, with food service being a particular passion. And I think food and drinks particularly resonate with me because it impacts everyone. And because it's such an interesting and fast-paced environment, it's always changing. So there's always something really interesting going on.
So with that in mind, what was your favourite food and drink coming from 2019?
Ooh, that's a good question. There's so many to choose from. I think for me, Pan Asian has really been the standout. It's something that we're all kind of familiar with, but it's really taken off more recently. And there's just so much choice and so many different flavours. And I think for me personally as well, what I really like is the different kind of textures and options that there are, both kind of from a meat and non-meat perspective. So it keeps me returning to try different dishes. I also tried a number of meat replacement products last year in 2019, which I found to be a really new and interesting experience. So I am a meat eater, but actually I'm probably part of that that kind of 29% of people that likes to reduce their meat consumption occasionally. And the standout one for me was seitan, which is a wheat gluten product. Yeah. That can be used as a meat substitute and it is protein rich. And that was a really interesting one because texturally I couldn't really tell the difference. So I thought that was quite interesting to try last year.
In looking into 2020, what do you think is going to be developing in the new trends for the next year?
Well, I think I'm quite excited about all the kind of new kind of cross-category foods. So things that you wouldn't expect to be like a drink that is coming from a vegetable. For example, there's a pea milk, which is going to come out, which is yellow split peas. And I mean, we've seen things like this in the past, obviously, with like almond milk, yeah, nut milks, etc. But I think that's quite interesting, that kind of cross-purpose food product. And also there's a new trend coming out with everything to do with using kind of every part of fish and seafood called charcuterie, which is kind of replacing charcuterie with meat. And one of those things I want to try because I love salmon and I also love kind of meats, and there's a salmon pastrami. So I think that'll be quite interesting to try in the future. And then I guess the last bit is that plant-based food, which is evolving all the time and really responding to that move towards more of a vegetable-based diet and fruit-based diet. So things like vegan tuna, which I know has been recently in the news, which is actually watermelon. And I know Wagamama's, for example, are serving that. I think those things are going to be really exciting to try, to almost compare to what we already know and see what they taste like and is it something that you can move towards as a change or as a wholesale change or as a you know, something to try to kind of balance the meat consumption side of things. And I think the last element that I'm quite excited about is the usage of herbs and spices in food, because I think as we move towards more of a plant-based diet approach, there's a lot more reliance on those herbs and spices to really bring out the flavours and make sure it's hitting that umami sense in the mouth. Yeah. And you're getting the same level of satisfaction. So I know that, for example, KFC have brought out the KFB burger, and it's a vegan burger, but it uses 11 herbs and spices as an example, and they're really talking about that. Yeah. So that's quite interesting as well.
Yeah, we actually touched upon that earlier, how KFC have done that, and it's adding a new element to their menu. Consumers, they want that flexibility, and they want to reduce their meat intake, so they're looking for different options, and that's how they're going to get them, aren't they, through these new offerings.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And I think we're seeing a real change in the market now where it's becoming much more mainstream.
Yes, exactly.
Hello, Fiona. We are going to talk about one of the social trends, individual versus community. And I thought it would be great to get your opinion in terms of how you think this has changed over the last couple of years and what we can expect to see in 2020 in terms of society, individuals with Brand Me, but also bringing communities closer together again.
I guess we do lots of different research at CGA, and one of the areas that we've really been kind of focused on is how the out of home is changing and how that role of kind of community is really impacting the way that we eat. So one of those areas that we're really seeing a rise is the rise of food halls and that change towards communal eating. So and that's quite interesting because we know that actually now more than ever, there are more options for consumers to stay in. So the fact that that is happening is a really positive sign for the out of home. But what we're seeing is that, for example, they've really got quite a lot of choice, both for staying in and going out. And to give you a sense of that, that kind of draw to not go out and why it's important that people are still going out, is that so 86% of consumers order food from a local takeaway, 85% watch Netflix or an equivalent subscription, and 71% order food from third-party delivery services. But despite that, they are engaging in these new and different ways to eat out. And that sense of community is really important, both from a mental and health well-being, and also just in terms of shared experience. And we know that experience is really important for the out-of-home kind of engagement side of things. And we know that 22% of consumers are still saying that they prefer an activity in terms of going out and night out, and 21% are still eating meals at restaurants as something to do. So we do know that they are still engaging in that way. And social media plays a role in all of this, because we know that also consumers are very mindful of whether they're being seen to be going out and also what they're being seen to experience. So 33% say, for example, that if they don't post about a night out, it's like it never happened. And that's quite a statement to make, and certainly a change in the way that people are engaging with their experiences out of home, and that community element of sharing what they've done. And 51% of consumers get ideas of where to go based on their friends' social media posts. So it's a really huge part of that community element that comes out of that.
And you mentioned that social media is really important for the communication and promotion of some of these outlets. And obviously it has that social currency element as well that consumers are relying on and using as their sort of credentials for who they are.
Yeah.
At the other end of the sort of community and individual element is the rise in loneliness. And what have you been seeing changing in that area? Because obviously we've got a lot more single occupancy in households, so it could be the younger generation who are focused on careers, but right the way through to the elderly generation, where we're seeing people living longer. And the impact of that is obviously some of the mental health issues. How do you think sort of food service and eating out and community spaces can bring some of that together and eliminate some of those things that are such a burden on the NHS?
Yeah, I think there's two elements to that in terms of how it can help combat loneliness. One is around that multi-purpose use of outlets and venues. So making sure that aside from their main purpose, which is of course to be a business that makes money and drives that great food and experience, that actually there's a multi-purpose element to what they do. So, you know, having a space that is available to maybe socialise in or work, hosting kind of cross-age events to drive that kind of engagement with the older generation and the younger generation, and also making sure that they as a business endorse that mental health side of things, both for their staff and their customers, and from a supplier perspective and a wholesaler perspective, supporting them in that so that they've got really clear pathways to do that in. And then I guess from a health perspective, it's about the quality of the product that is being served and all those really great health credentials and kind of stories around the products and the sourcing, the sustainability, all that side of things, but also the broader menu planning and understanding that whilst consumers are still going to eat out, that actually they may not want to, you know, kind of damage their health plans accordingly. If they're doing that, they want to have kind of permissive great occasions and you know, the permission to indulge, but in a healthy way.
So in terms of how this trend could develop over time, what do you think are the roles of other businesses involved in that supply chain right the way through to the end venue for food service? How can they be better involved in promoting some of these initiatives?
So there's a kind of a dual element to it, because it's what people can do themselves individually and also what the organisations in the whole supply chain can do, as well as the kind of the end retailer or outlet. And I think a good example of that is the Bistow Together project, which is the Spare Chair Sunday, where that's encouraging people to have a roast at home. But there's no reason that can't be replicated in terms of using maybe the technology that we're seeing in pre-order apps to maybe invite someone for a drink. Or I know, for example, on the Wetherspoons app, you can put credit on to the app and say, have a drink on me. So maybe rather than having that option, maybe you do a month where there's kind of some sort of engagement that way, where you encourage people to have a drink with someone you've not seen in a while, or somebody in your community, to get them out of their home and really kind of benefiting from the mental health aspect of socialising together.
So again, we're seeing the impact of phones and social media having a role to play in this, and not being the enemy in terms of keeping people isolated. It's quite an interesting angle on that.
Yeah, I think social media can be isolating if it's not engaged with in the right way. And I think what people can do is, obviously from a personal perspective, is making sure they're reaching out literally and tangibly, not just through social media, although that is a tool to do that with, but also from a supplier and wholesaler perspective, is really highlighting the social benefits and the actual commercial benefit of doing that as well. Because, you know, engaging with the community in that way really drives the perception of the venue as a positive, you know, meeting place for people to engage, and really helping them with that insight and driving that thought leadership is a great way to make sure that we're not just serving a purpose as a venue to go out in, but actually really driving that community spirit and engagement.
And one thing we've talked about is the rise in popularity of street halls. How do you think that's going to evolve in 2020 and beyond? Are we going to see more of them? Are they going to change shape slightly? Are we going to see a different consumer base?
Yeah, I think, I think the first thing to say is that they are rising popularity and at a pace. And we know that it comes back down to that kind of experiential element, because people are really enjoying kind of that lively communal dining forum from multiple kitchens, where they can effectively pick and mix without the pain, I guess, of the shared bill, because you go and choose and pay and then come back, or you might choose to go with friends and everyone put money into a pot. You know, there's different options there. So I think they are rising at a pace. How it's going to change next year, is going to be interesting to watch, because what we're seeing is that actually there's an element of sameness or similarity between those market halls. So I think differentiation is going to be really important. And I think from a supplier and wholesaler perspective, it's understanding which products do they need to deliver that option well. So I think that's an element to be really mindful of.
So Fiona, we're going to move on and talk about the next social trend, which is helpful tech. Now, this is an interesting one because it sort of looks at how technology is changing the shape of our lives, but also how we're influencing the future of technology. What would you say has been sort of most revolutionary in 2019 and what we can expect to see in 2020?
Well, I think a huge element has been the engagement from operators in the out of home with technology, and that real shift in that, in terms of people starting to realise how it can drive engagement, but also really help them communicate information to consumers in an effective manner. And I think that has been the real shift we've seen in 2019, and we'll continue to see more of in 2020.
And what sectors do you think will be seeing the most impact in terms of technology? So if we think about children at school and university, right the way through to people eating out, but also at the other end where some of the older generation are much more savvy in terms of technology, where do you think some of the biggest impact will be?
I think the biggest area we're going to see technology playing a more prominent role is going to be in the area of health management. So, and I think that will cut across all age groups and all kind of societal areas, because I think as people become more focused on health and sustainability, there's a lot of work in terms of apps being developed that help people understand how they can eat more sustainably and cleanly and healthily, but also where they can get that food from. So apps that tell you the calorific values of the products and how well to, you know, kind of engage with those things, and also services like DNA Fit, where you are looking at your DNA and what you should eat in response to that, are beginning to cross over into that eating out and drinking out space, but also it's also personal health. So you're really seeing those lines blurring between health and eating and drinking and how that impacts you individually. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. You're seeing things like self-generated blood testing apps where you can, and you see them advertised on Facebook, on, you know, all the different social platforms where people can send off samples of their blood and have that tested and check, you know, whether they have various different disorders or whatever, and reads of their blood tests, which is something you typically do through your GP, but is now being kind of the power, if you like, is being shifted to the consumer.
So there's a lot more advantages to having technology around for all of us as we sort of lead our everyday lives. But do you think there might be some backlash? So we've got technology integrated in so many areas of our lives. How do you think it's going to come back against us negatively in the future, or will it?
Well, I think that there is always a positive and a negative to everything that you see. And I think some of the challenges with technology is, are people interpreting what's coming back in that example I gave of blood tests and DNA fit, etc. Are they interpreting those results correctly and applying them correctly? So I think that's an area of risk. And I think also with lots of information comes a lot of responsibility. So again, understanding how are people interpreting that information and applying it to themselves. And is it giving them the best possible outcome? Are they being almost overwhelmed with too much information? And I think that's the risk that both from an individual perspective as a if you like a tech user, but also from a business perspective that we have to be mindful of.
And we're seeing a lot more activity in terms of lab grown meat, hydroponic farming and vertical farming. Do you hear much Yeah. about that in the research that you're doing, or when you're talking to customers and prospects? Is it something they can feasibly engage with, or does it still seem a bit far away for some of the food service customers?
Yeah, I think it's something that is evolving, which I appreciate isn't a very committed answer there. But it's interesting. We work with a number of different organisations across the food industry, and one of those is the Y Food team. Mm-hmm. And they look at all the kind of tech-based advancements in food service and the out-home. And there's some really interesting stuff around lab-grown meat that I've read about and seen and kind of talked about, which I think is quite interesting to see. I think things like insect protein are a lot closer than lab-grown meat at this stage. In terms of, there's already products that are beginning to emerge in that space, things like energy bars, and crisps and things like that that are done with things like crickets, etc. But I think there's a kind of an angle around educating consumers and also getting their buy-in, because it's different to what they're used to. And whilst they are fickle and willing to try new things, I think education is paramount. So if suppliers are going down that route, they really need to have a comprehensive plan to market that product in a way that engages consumers, because they won't necessarily try stuff that they have no idea about. And I think that's the element, is getting the kind of the excitement around the newness of it right, so that they engage with it in the right way.
So Fiona from CGA, thank you ever so much for your time today.
Welcome back. Next up, joining us today is Emily Lowry, who manages our social media channels, and she'll be covering the social trend of wellness engineers. Before we go on to that, Emily, what was your favourite meal of 2019?
I had a little think about this and I couldn't pick one, but I'm going to say anything with buffalo sauce. I went to Meat Liquor. I tried these things called monkey fingers, which is basically chicken goujon in a buffalo sauce, and they have changed my life.
Sound lovely. So what are you looking forward to going forward in 2020 in terms of the new trends?
I would say that global flavours coming through is something I'm really excited about. I want to see some more bao buns. I want to see them being fused with other flavours from around the world. On our website, we have a sticky chicken bao buns recipe. It has kind of the world heat coming through in the flavour, but it's equally being combined with kind of an authentic Asian dish, which I'm really excited about.
So now moving on to wellness engineers, what is it you think that it appeals so much about this trend to customers?
I think the movement, not away from physical health, but it's kind of not only about physical health anymore. It's about everything to do with your wellness. I think that makes the trend a lot more accessible. So you don't have to kind of go for a run 3 times a week or make sure you're going to the gym. You can kind of just eat well, look after your gut health, meditate and de-stress.
How would you say consumers are fitting this into their lifestyles?
I think the use of technology and phones is really helping people fit this into their lifestyles. You've got apps like Headspace, Calm, where you can almost log onto your phone and then you've got a 2-minute meditation session that can kind of help people de-stress and feel a bit more grounded. So it's kind of at the tip of your fingertips, I guess.
And I guess that means it's more accessible at any time of the day for anyone to just dip in for a little bit of meditation or self-help as required.
Yeah, so I guess if you think about like a coffee break, you probably spend that amount of time going to get a coffee. So it's almost, instead of doing that, you could take some time alone and go on your app and have some downtime.
There's a lot around, you talking about the workplace there. It's particularly, I think, where people are using their time, where it's such a hectic lifestyle, where they need to have these breaks, and lots of companies are investing in that. So you see people that are having sort of yoga sessions at lunchtime, wellness areas where people can go and just get away from their desks and things. How do you think this is going to develop going forward? Do you think there's going to be more of that going through?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's only going to become more and more important. You've obviously got millennial burnout. It's a huge topic in the news. And I think employers are going to have to start looking at their spaces and kind of their offering to make sure that they're attracting talent in a way that makes well-being, it's kind of at the centre of their business rather than it kind of being an add-on perk.
We've mentioned this in terms of employment and the workforce, but I guess we've seen issues in terms of mental health and wellness from early on for some people, so from school age right the way through to university. What do you think might change in that space as well to make it accessible for people to grab those 5 or 10 minutes just to have a bit of time to themselves?
I guess from a school age, it's maybe incorporating it onto the curriculum in some way. So I guess if they've got their breaks and lunch times, it's kind of teaching the students how to use those breaks to actually have a break. So I guess there's a lot of conversation around when people go on their breaks, they're on their phones or they're on technology, or you're working or you've got your laptop there. It's kind of, people aren't actually having a break. So maybe it's kind of an education piece for both students and, I guess, school children.
What would you say is the role for food and drink within all of this to help people get the best out of their days in terms of everything they're consuming?
I think we're all becoming more aware of gut health and nutrition. So it's not just around eating a balanced meal. It's about making sure you're eating the right nutrients that are good for your gut, and can kind of, I think the gut's linked as the second brain, so you get serotonin from it and all that good stuff. So I guess people are going to become more aware of what foods are good for them, because again, it's on a personal level as well. So I think DNA will be coming through. I think you can already get kits where you give people your DNA and they can kind of have a little look at your gut and sort of say to you, these foods are really good for you, these foods to avoid. So I think it's just going to become more and more important as we all learn about it.
So what is it that Bidfood are doing to support wellness engineers?
We had a campaign that launched in January. It's called The Square Root of Self. It was looking at university students and how we can help our university customers get the right offering to kind of promote well-being in their outlets. So not only looking at food, but looking at kind of the space and I guess how you can make people start talking about their well-being in an open space. A big part of the campaign was looking at food. So we worked with a nutritionist called Christine Bailey. She spoke a bit about gut health and the links between your brain and your gut. And then on the back of that, we had our chef team develop some well-being recipes. So taking some really key ingredients like avocado, salmon, which are known to kind of give you that feel-good mood, and incorporating them into an easy recipe that you can use on your outlet.
So we've talked a lot about health being one of the primary focuses for this trend, but would you say there's still room for an element of indulgence just to boost well-being every now and again too?
I think definitely. I think you can get too bogged down in the kind of, I need to be eating this, I need to be doing this. It kind of almost adds to your stress because you're kind of going through each day ticking off, I need to meditate, I need to make sure I'm eating my good food that's good for my gut health. It's almost like you need that indulgence of actually saying, okay, I'm usually being good and eating my salmon, but actually if I want a burger, I'm going to eat a burger. And if I want to go and experience something, then I'm going to go and experience it.
That's great. Thank you very much for joining us today, Emily.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our final guest for the podcast is Lily Carr, who is our Senior Insights Exec, and we'll be covering throwback comforts. Hi, Lily.
Hi, Joe.
So, Lily, do you want to tell us a bit about your role?
Sure. So I work in the insights team here at Bidfood. One of our major projects is launching trends for the next year. So that's what we'll be talking about today.
So what are you looking forward to the most from our latest trends?
I guess it's just seeing how they play out across the year and what we'll see coming through for 2021 as well, whether it be kind of the new cuisines coming through or more about the way we eat, for example, more sustainably.
So we'll be covering throwback comforts now. So what is this trend?
Throwback comforts is really all about nostalgia. And what this means is that we sort of live in really tumultuous times, whether that be social or political. And actually, we're really looking for that kind of touch of comfort in these times. And food and drink has a really big role to play in kind of creating those feelings of nostalgia and comfort.
So what is it about nostalgia that is making it so big right now?
It's always big, but I guess it depends on which generation is hitting it at that time. So at the moment, we see a kind of a revival of 90s fashion, music and food, because millennials are hitting that stage where they're starting to look back. And there's some debate around whether millennials are the most nostalgic generation yet, just because, well, me being a millennial, we grew up in kind of a time of real rapid change. And we came into the world in a boom, but kind of entered the workplace in sort of the recession time. So it's been quite a stressful time kind of growing up in that era, and looking back kind of gives you that kind of a comfort blanket of the way things used to be.
I think this year also we've got some quite important events coming up as well. What do you think they'll do to influence how nostalgic people will be feeling?
So this year we have VE Day. And I think that really taps into looking back into kind of older values such as waste not, want not. And I think it's kind of gone round in a circle. They're really prevalent today in terms of thinking about how we can live and eat more sustainably, how we reduce food waste and how we eat food and cook food to make sure that we're not wasting anything. And it's interesting that that's come at this time.
So what does this actually mean for the food we're going to be eating?
So I think this means we'll start to see dishes from times gone by or decades gone by kind of being reinvented. So 70s classics are making a bit of a comeback. So if you like deviled eggs and prawn cocktails, this is your year. You might have a new modern twist on it, but you'll see kind of the nostalgic elements come through.
Do we see some of the old traditional ways of cooking and producing food coming through in that as well?
Definitely. So this year we'll see a lot more cooking on the bone, a lot more using up food waste and really thinking about how you use different ingredients to maximise flavour. And in terms of skills, we'll see a revival in kind of butchery skills as well. Again, kind of when we're looking at the on the bone trend, this kind of feeds into that as well.
It'd be like old cuts of meat that we potentially wouldn't have bought 10 years ago, coming back into things and things like that.
Definitely. If you're thinking about using the whole animal or the whole vegetable, a lot more offal will be on menus.
It's not just meat though as well, because we're doing for like vegetables and things like that, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely. So traditionally you might cut the top of a carrot off, but actually how can you use that in a different dish or as a garnish? So it's really simple kind of small changes which feed into this.
And what other skills would you say that consumers are trying to acquire that hark back to that nostalgic era?
I think there's a push towards more creative hobbies. So things like sewing and knitting are really coming back. So you have knit and natter groups, but are not just for kind of the older generation. A lot more younger people are getting involved as well. There's different initiatives as well, and companies doing things like Makebox. So kind of using technology to enable kind of older crafts. So they'll send you a box every month where you can kind of do cross-stitching or sewing and create your own kind of creations. Away from social media, I think, is where we've been. And now it's kind of harking back to those different hobbies.
So I guess this could lead to a sort of more of a frugal mentality for consumers.
It could do. When we're looking at younger generations like Generation Z, they definitely have a much more frugal mentality. They're looking to save their money, but when they do spend their money, it's on kind of things like social causes that they care about.
That's great. Thank you very much for your time, Lily.
Thank you, Joe.
So we've come to the end of the podcast now. In summary, Lucy, was there anything that really resonated for you today?
I think what I got was a sense of reassurance across all the trends about everyone's efforts to focus on the sustainability element. There was lots of talk about various aspects of that that ran through all of the trends, and it was really reassuring to see that engagement from everybody.
That was Lucy Pedrick talking there. Thank you to all of our guests, Rupak, Fiona, Emily and Lily. Next up in this series will be part two of our trends podcast, looking at the food and drink trends for 2020. So in order to make sure you find out what these trends are as soon as they are revealed, be sure to subscribe to us so it downloads straight to your device without you even having to think about it. Also, if you're able to share and review the podcast, it'll mean more people can listen and learn about our take on what's hot in food service. Until next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.